This episode is sponsored by Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy is dedicated to providing 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. Join Xcel Energy and you'll find a purpose-driven career, solid job security, and challenging work. Xcel Energy knows the value your military service brings to the workplace. It's an exciting time to be in the energy industry. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, learn about the opportunities with one of America's leading utilities, Xcel Energy, at xcelenergy.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 331, Tech, Side Hustles, and Relationships with GS Youngblood.
And it's sure as hell not about checklists and relationship. And I fell into that trap. Even when I got out of the military, I was, I would come home and act like I was still at work or still in the military. And, my poor ex-wife suffered because of it, because I wasn't really tuned into my emotions, the connection between us. And so I just got to say, you can't be all about getting it done. It doesn't work in relationships. So learn to tune into your emotional body. It's not so you can be an evolved man. It's not at all some new age evolved man. It is not about that. It's about being powerful. And when you tap into that, your own emotions, your spouse's emotions, the connection between you, and go to that very different level, that's when you'll see real benefit in your relationship.
My guest today transitioned from the Air Force into high tech in Silicon Valley, where he has worked in product management at Intel, Trulia, Realtor.com, and other great companies. He also wrote a book about product management, where he takes the principles around procedures and checklists from the military and applies them to the functional role of product management. However, beyond our discussion of product management in this interview, there are two things that I absolutely loved about my conversation with GS. First, side hustle. GS made the transition to the real estate industry. While his day job was building tech products for real estate industries, companies, he leveraged what he was learning to start investing in real estate as a side hustle. The result is that, over the course of his career, he developed side income that has allowed him to transition into more meaningful work around coaching and writing. This is a wonderful example of how, outside of the workplace, listeners can cultivate a hobby that creates the financial freedom to pursue a deeper purpose in your next chapter. Second, relationships. In the 300 plus episodes I've done so far, we've only talked about relationships in one other episode, and that is the recent episode 323, Conscious Leadership with Floyd Carlson. It's something we should talk about more. For those of you who are in a relationship, I'm sure you can relate. When my relationship is off with my wife, Rebecca, everything is off in my life. I'm not as productive at work. I'm not as focused in my conversations. I'm not able to operate my peak potential in my professional life. There is not this clear distinction between work and life. They blend together and one affects the other. In his work with couples and in his recent book, The Masculine in Relationship, GS brings some very poignant advice to how listeners can improve and deepen their relationship. I know, this is a podcast about career success, but trust me on this. You can have success in your career without success in your relationship or family, but it's not much fun. I met GS through the men's work I'm doing with John Wineland, and it was a pleasure to get to know this professional side of him in our conversation. I hope you enjoy it as well. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find over 300 other episodes just like this for free, as well as events, publications, and other resources to help you in your civilian career. Be sure to check out the show notes, where we have links to both of GS's books, as well as every resource we discuss. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with GS. Well, joining me today in Menlo Park, California, outside of San Francisco, my guest is GS. GS, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Good morning, Justin.
I want to give listeners a brief background. GS is a men's coach focused on men in relationship. He's also a former Silicon Valley executive, founder of a tech company that he eventually sold, and author of two books, including the recently published The Masculine in Relationship. His teachings are based on 12 years as a student and creator in the realm of the masculine-feminine dynamic, and also pulls in principles from a variety of fields, including psychology, martial arts, tango, meditation, and even BDSM. After his time as a military officer in the Air Force, GS got his MBA from the University of Virginia and transitioned into the high-tech industry. He spent time at Intel, Broadcom, Trulia, Realtor.com, and Matterport. He also founded and sold the company CityStash, which sought to disrupt this $23 billion self-storage space with technology. So maybe rewinding the clock when you left the Air Force a while back, what was that transition like and what led you to get your MBA?
Well, I'll admit that transition was scary as I was entering it and going through it. It really felt like leaving the cocoon in some ways. I had known the military my whole life. My father was a career military officer. And after I did my time, it was a scary transition, but it was one I knew I needed to do based on my own aspirations. And the decision to get an MBA was very strictly for the purposes of making a smooth transition. You know, I didn't have business skills. I had engineering skills, which was my undergrad and what I did in the military, but I didn't have business skills, and I knew that's the direction I wanted to head. So an MBA was actually really the perfect bridge for me to go out into corporate life.
Hmm. And you started off in product management. I'd love to dive into two things here. So first of all, what led you to product management? A quick description of what it is for someone on active duty who might not be familiar with it. But I'd love to let you go a little bit deeper because you wrote a book on product management. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about that book and some of the things that you learned in that led up to writing it.
Yeah, well, I stumbled into product management in the sense of during the 2 years of my MBA program, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I just spent a lot of time with a lot of people, either second years in the program or who had gone out into industry, and finding out about different things, consulting, corporate finance, marketing, and a lot of other fields. And none of them really resonated for me. It was dissatisfying learning about some of the fields out there until somebody told me about product management. And so it may help your listeners to understand that product management it's essentially the one person that at a company, usually it's a product company. You really run the gamut of different types of products, whether it's something online or something physical. But that person owns every aspect of that product, and it's their job to really make sure that everybody's aligned, that the product is defined in a way that meets the market requirements and will be something that the market wants to buy, that engineering delivers on the exact specification of that product, and then that you arm the marketing and sales folks how to market it and how to sell it. And it's not a program manager. It's not the guy who's running the Gantt chart necessarily. It's really much, much more than that. You have to have business skills. You have to understand marketing. You have to understand technology and how to work with engineers. And so it uses a broad skill set. And the most interesting thing I think for your listeners around product management is you don't really have anybody that works for you. You are dotted lined into all these people. So you have to influence without necessarily direct authority. And this is where the leadership skills that you can develop in the military really came into play for me. And that was why I was drawn to it, because I could bring those leadership skills to bear. I could combine them with the electrical engineering education that I'd had, as well as the business skills I had just gotten. And the package of three actually made me a really good candidate. And I was able to catch on with a very well-known technology company because of that combination. So my military background really was just a big lift in terms of making me attractive to employers. And so, you know, for your listeners, really focus in on that leadership skill. And it's about the ability to get things done in the face of adversity. And so if you weave that narrative into your interviews, into letters you send to potential employers, that's really going to go a long way. And I highly encourage that.
And I, I love the thought of veterans going into product management. My experience on submarines, I feel like is a flavor of product management, where I had to know a little bit about sonar and weapons and navigation and the nuclear reactor and every aspect of the ship. I was by no means the expert, but I had to be able to converse with the different teams and lead them in a cohesive direction. And Greg used a term, dotted line, which means you don't have a direct report. You don't have official authority over them. I found myself in that position a lot too on submarines. And so you're working with all of these different people and getting them to go in one direction, mm-hmm. which is very similar to what GS is describing with product management, of being able to talk to marketers and customer support teams and engineers and all of these different groups, knowing a little bit about what they do, but by no means the expert, but galvanizing them in one direction. And I wanted to go deeper. Could you tell us the name of your book? I'll add it in the show notes for listeners, mm-hmm. but what sort of things do you cover in the book?
So I know you're asking me about the first book, the business
yes, yeah.
book. Yeah. Yep. So that the title of that is System, Not Circumstance. Mm-hmm. And the background there is that I saw companies who were achieving success and putting out really good products. But what would happen is, as those companies grew, a lot of times either new people would come on board that didn't have the historical knowledge, or the good people would leave and go off to smaller startups. And then you'd have to plug in new people. And I became fascinated by the ability for companies to really continue that success, continue the to churn out great products even while new people come in and good people leave. How do you institutionalize that greatness? And what I was drawing on was what I call the checklist culture of the military. I assume the Navy was very similar to how the Air Force was. It was checklist. Everything was a checklist. And the reason was, you had a constant stream of new members within these military teams. People coming, people going, people getting PCS to different bases. And so the corporate knowledge was hard to hold in the minds of the people involved. It really had to go into the checklists. And so what I tried to do with the book was boil down the elements of product success into a series of, I have to recall, but I think it was 37 different, you know, checklist items spread out across, you know, 19 chapters in the book. And that book was a joy to write, and really, really I used a lot of my military experience, again, that checklist culture, to help drive that.
I love that, because I hated checklists. There were so many of them on submarines, and I love the thought of like learning to appreciate the thing that I hated and actually turning it and applying it to something completely new. I also wanted to talk about your transition, because we have a lot of people listening who go through career transitions. Mm-hmm. Your transition into the real estate industry, what first of all led to that kind of honing in on one specific industry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I came out of the military and out of my MBA program, and I went into the semiconductor industry. So, you know, Intel was my first employer in creating the chips that go into all the devices that we're all so obsessed with now. Mm-hmm. But it was so technology heavy that it really, the people element was getting lost. Not the people I worked with, that was there, but in terms of the market, it's at some point became less interesting to me. And I wanted to focus my business and technology skills on a market that was really just more people oriented and dynamic and changing. And I tell you, there's few markets other than real estate that have, you know, people and personality involved, and real estate agents tend to have a lot of personality, be very expressive people. And at the same time, it was an industry that was ripe for disruption from technology. And so that's when I joined Trulia, and it turned out to be everything I thought it was. It's been a very exciting industry. I spent about 6 or 7 years in prop tech, you know, property technology. And it was a lot of fun, and we did a lot of disruption, which was also a lot of fun.
And for listeners not familiar with the companies I read off in GS's bio, this is really the who's who of some of the most successful companies in Real Estate Technology, Trilia, Realtor.com, Matterport, all three of those are really great companies to, for GS to have gained experience and knowledge. But one of the things I wanted to zoom in on that I think is relevant for listeners, regardless if you're interested in real estate as an industry or product management as a functional role, is one of the things I admire with GS is you, it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you had a career path that was fulfilling, that paid the bills, that allowed you to be involved in these great companies. And you started to gain exposure to real estate. And it seems like you were able to leverage that into an effective hobby or side hustle or kind of side gig, using that knowledge to actually start investing and play around with real estate. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I find myself often doing things on the side. Even during the MBA program, I did a systems engineering degree on the side. And I'm the same way today, where I'm just a big believer that you have work and then you have your passion and then you have, you know, things that can bring in extra revenue streams. And if you've got the time or if you make the time, I think it's very important to do something on the side that either really fulfills that passion side of you or, again, as I said, brings in extra revenue streams. So I just started to get more and more knowledgeable during my first few years in PropTech around real estate and the opportunities for investment that were there, and realized if you had the right data, you could really pick out the areas that would experience growth and therefore property values would rise. So I took some of my retirement funds and started to put them into various real estate assets that I bought. And I started slow and then built up over time. But I also spent a ton of time educating myself because it's really easy to get in over your head with real estate. It's one of those things that it's high risk, high reward. And the risk comes from making bad decisions. It's rare that the market, you know, other than 2008, it's rare that the market changes so dramatically that you're irreparably harmed in terms of the value of your assets and you have to lose all your money. The only reason you lose money is if you get in over your head with debt or the expenses of a property that you buy. So with good decisions, with educating yourself, it's absolutely possible to make money in real estate, whether that be commercial real estate or residential real estate. So that's what I've been doing on the side. And I've been very successful in that regard. And it's created a certain level of financial freedom for me, which is really relaxing for me. And it's great. I can, you know, spend the money I want to spend on my kids or their education and other things that the family wants to do.
I love this aspect. If listeners have listened to the episode with Doug Nordman, he was a 20-year career submariner who found a way to live off of his retirement, and he surfs, he writes, he does time with his kids. It's just like he has this incredible life because of the financial freedom that he built up for himself. Mm-hmm. And your example, GS, is very similar, though extremely different, which is you had a job, you cultivated a side hustle. It sounds like that side hustle energized you, gave you creative energy. It kind of scratched an itch. And it also, over time, created a lot of financial freedom. And I want to transition in a second to talk about what you're doing with that financial freedom. But I just want to make space. Is there any other advice you have for people? I want to call it one other thing that you said, which is I think it's popularized today that people take the big leap and they jump into something entrepreneurial, or they take a leap on and bet on themselves, which I'm not dissuading listeners. But what I respect about what you said is you cultivated this knowledge. You had time at work to actually build up this skill. So it wasn't like you were investing blindly, like you were very smart about how you approach this side hustle. But I wanted to make space. Any other advice for listeners as they think of pursuing a side hobby or building up some sort of side hustle?
I have two things that I would share. One's a little bit outside the realm of the question, but it's close. Financial freedom. You will never get it working for somebody else. And I say never, that's of course too strong of a word, but I say it for effect. It's the rich dad, poor dad philosophy. where you've got to build up passive income on the side, whatever form that takes, because you can't rely on a salary, especially if you're getting out of the military before retirement, you don't have that retirement pay. And so you've really got to build up that passive income and work very hard at establishing that and start now. Start in your 20s if you're still in that phase. But one piece of advice I would have for anybody considering exiting and transitioning out of the military is build your business skills. You have to build your business skills. At one phase in my career, I wanted to change from product management over to product marketing. And actually, I'd kind of done product marketing, but I'd never had any formal training. To get a job in that field, I had to know the lingo. I had to have some skills. And so I got onto LinkedIn Learning and a few other sites like Udemy. And I took the free courses. I may have paid for a few of them, but most of them were free. And I learned the lingo and I taught myself these skills using these video platforms. So I really encourage your listeners to build your skills, build your skills. Don't think that you can come out and ride, you know, the leadership angle. That's only one piece. You have to couple the leadership angle with skills. And once you do that, you're a very potent combination as a candidate for a job.
That's great. It's a great call for lifelong learning. And I love the sense of, you know, I feel like sometimes we from the military can let a sense of bravado and entitlement drive us to I want to do this, I'm going to do it. And I love here again, just like in your side hustle, you're digging down, you're learning the skills, you're doing the work. These are things I'm imagining are on nights and weekends where you're taking these free courses and doing it really efficiently, but that gives you the credibility then to make that switch.
Yeah. And the piece I think you were hinting at, and I'll just bring out, cause I didn't say it, is do it while you're working. You know, don't think that you're going to get out and then do it. Do it while you're working and develop either your side hustle or your skills while you're working. You know, find the time on nights and weekends, as you said, Justin. But you've got to do it now while you're still able, you know, still generating an income from your job now.
That's great. So let's transition to talk about, it seems like, again, one of the things that you're using your freedom to do is you're continuing writing. You're actually, you know, moving towards a career as a coach. Could you share two things maybe? One is, what would you want listeners to know about this work you do in coaching? And I also want to give you space to talk about a book that you've just released, The Masculine in Relationship. Anything you'd want listeners to know about that?
Yeah, I work with men. And coaching them. And I really try to focus on men in relationship because it's an area I can speak very credibly to, having been through a 10-year marriage and a divorce that was very hard. And now I think doing it the right way, I'm in long-term relationship. I've been there and back. And I've been working in the field of men and men's issues and men's groundedness for about 12 years now. And so I know that your listeners are men and women. My audience is mostly on men because I think I could speak more credibly there. But, you know, men, you can have a better relationship. It's not inevitable that in relationship things get, you know, a little flat or irritable, or even, you know, some relationships where it can get even really toxic. That is not an inevitable outcome of long-term relationship. And to men, I say there's a body of knowledge out there that speaks to your way of being, the way that you show up in the world, the way that you take in, you know, the information around you, including from your partner. That you can actually start to see the world differently. You can actually start to operate in the world differently in a way that really has your relationship problems start to fade into the background. And so I encourage any man to try to access, go out and access these resources out there. And of course, I hope my book is one piece of that. It's my offering into the world of the best of what I've learned and observed both in myself and others, and codified into a set of principles that are organized into a three-part blueprint in the book. And that three-part blueprint is something that men can, it's a lens through which men can can see the world and then begin to develop the skills necessary to be different in the world. And that's what the book is about, and it is my offering to men to help improve their own relationships.
What I love about that is I often get stuck in this tar pit of believing that someone else needs to change, whether it's in a work relationship, whether it's in a friendship. But I think that in my life, at least, and I think in most people's, our romantic relationships are really the most fertile ground to practice. And that's where we get triggered the most. That's where maybe our worst side comes out, because we're around this person so much. And I love this sense that, you know, my wife doesn't need to change for our relationship to change.
Yeah.
And I've seen that in the work that Janice and I have done together, is the ways in which, when I shift the way that I'm showing up, when I shift the beliefs that are driving me, my wife doesn't have to change, but our relationship changes dramatically. And I've shared with listeners on a Saturday episode about this shift of believing that the world isn't safe, and then working to switch that to like, oh, the world is my playground. You can imagine the energy that I bring, you know, home from work to my wife when I'm believing the world's not safe, believing she's secretly out to get me, to like just having fun with it. I'm a different guy showing up, and the way that she responds to me is completely different than when I'm tensed up, when I'm bracing for her to say something or give me some task to do. Instead of just having fun, that shifts everything.
Yeah. I love hearing that. I mean, I love that just for you personally, and hearing about that shift in your relationship. One of the things there's a phrase that I think I say three times. I'm so enamored with it, but it's that it's men. You may or may not be the problem in a particular fight you're having, but you are the solution. And the degree to which you can stop waiting for your partner to change, stop thinking that it's something that she's doing, and work on yourself. And in your example, what I'm hearing is you worked on the ways that you project sort of something onto her, ill intent, aggressiveness, anything like that. And then you start operating from that context. And then she responds to you from your context. And it's like, it's a vicious cycle downward. And I empathize. I also project on my woman a little bit. And I've recently come in, gotten some clarity around how I do that and the impact. And the impact is huge. My way of being is affecting how she shows up in the world. So it's an easy solution. I just need to work on my way of being. In this case, it's my projections. And it sounds like you were saying the same thing. You know, you and I work on the way that we project. We settle, she settles. We didn't have to ask or demand anything of her. We just changed ourselves. So now it's a core theme of the book, this really strong sense of responsibility for everything around you.
And I just want to say that again for listeners, because I thought that was such a great phrase. What I heard was, you may or may not be a problem in the fight you're having, but you are the solution. And I remember one of the guys on our recent trip to Death Valley, he said in his marriage, he's committing to opening first. And I love that sense of proactiveness and leadership in one's family. I think that oftentimes I will shut down, I'll close up, and it's up to my wife to mend. Like, I'm going to be the little boy stomping down, and she needs to come and make up, and then we'll get on track. And I love the sense of responsibility of, like, even if I feel like closing down or separating myself, I commit to being the first person to open up, to go to her, and to, as you said, that to be the solution in that problem.
Yeah. I love that. I'm glad that you brought the word leadership up. This, because my audience is men, this is masculine leadership. And it's, as you said, it's stop waiting for her to sort of mend the fences, to be the guardian of the connection between the two of you, and actually decide to be that yourself. And it's definitely something I try to do every day with my woman and lead us into a better place. I'm sort of transitioning to a tangential point, but one of the reasons this is so important for your listeners is military life can be hard, particularly with deployments. I've been through it. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be gone for a long time. And it's hard on relationships and marriages, and both people suffer, and those kids can suffer because of the spillover effect. And so I really recommend, whether it's my book or somebody else's book or any relationship resource, I really recommend for military families, particularly ones who are dealing with deployments, get access to these resources, start to dig in, start to work on your relationship just like you work on your golf swing or, you know, your strength in the gym. It's something that you can build over time and will pay massive dividends in your life.
I love that. I think what I love about that is, at least my experience, and I think for many listeners, I wasn't taught how to be in a relationship. I was taught to change a tire for my car. I was taught to start up a nuclear reactor. I've been taught many things and practiced many times. And it sounds like what you're describing is, like, for men and women listening to this to learn, whether through it's a book or a conference or coaching or whatever it is, learn what it's like to be in a relationship. And as you started to say at the start of the interview, learn how to be in a great relationship, not just this complacent dead thing, but the relationship that you want that's alive and full of love and energy.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you said that. It's, you know, that person that you met back when you, you know, started with your spouse, she or he, I'll speak to everybody here. She or he was fun and open and forgiving. And it was just a joy to be around to the degree that you kept developing the relationship and then you eventually married them. Your spouse can be like that again, even if they've faded, even if they've started to withdraw, even if it's a little flat, or, you know, heaven forbid it's gotten toxic, any of that, you can actually take the relationship back to that feeling when you first met. That person is still in there with your spouse. It's just about accessing the resources around these relationship dynamics. That's all you have to do, and work at it hard, and you can get back to that point when you both started.
I love that too. It made me think of when I was at the Naval Academy, one of the men I looked up to the most, General John Allen. He was such an incredible leader, Marine Corps officer. I noticed that when I was around him, I sat up straighter. Like, I wanted to be a better student, a better officer. Like, he evoked from me this sense of who I wanted to be. And when you said that, it's like, you know, this rediscovering that person that was at the start of the relationship, it made me think of what you were saying earlier, the sense that, like, we can evoke from our partner that person. We can show up in a different way that brings forward that part of them that we love that's deep inside. And that in many ways we contribute to them showing up differently. That's really powerful.
Yeah. Yep. I love the word evoke. That's the perfect one.
Anything else in your work with men and with couples, any other trend that you've seen that you want to surface for listeners now about dynamics you've seen or kind of common problems that you see experienced?
Well, we men are not the most emotional creatures in the world. And I think military men probably fall even farther down that spectrum. It's not about just get it done. And it's sure as hell not about checklists in the relationship. And I fell into that trap. Even when I got out of the military, I was so driven, particularly my years at Broadcom, where I was so engaged. And, you know, I would come home and act like I was still at work or still in the military. And, you know, my poor ex-wife suffered because of it, because I wasn't really tuned into my emotions, the connection between us. And so one of the chapters in the book is about emotions. And, you know, men, I just got to say, you can't be all about getting it done. It doesn't work in relationships. So for your listeners, you know, learn to tune into your emotional body. It's not so you can be an evolved man. It's not at all some new age evolved man. It is not about that. It's about being powerful. And when you tap into that, your own emotions, your spouse's emotions, the connection between you, and go to that very different level, that's when you'll see real benefit in your relationship. So I see that over and over with men.
I think that's great. I heard a quote forever ago that was the traits that are an asset for us at work or a liability in relationship. And I love what you're saying, which is like, we, especially for men, I think for women as well, but we can be in that work mode of getting shit done. Like that was the muscle I strengthened the most in the military was getting shit done. I got a PhD in getting shit done. and I know when I show up in that way in my marriage, it is not helpful. And I think it's even more powerful because like you literally wrote a book about taking checklists into the office. Like you wrote a book for product management about getting shit done. And it seems like the work that you've done with the masculine in relationship, it's really shifting gears. It's like saying that that framework that you used in your first book is not the framework that's going to work in our marriages, family, mm-hmm. and personal life. Mm-hmm. And I respect the amount of growth and strength that must have taken to completely shift orientation from one book to your second book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Say that. Can I pause, Justin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully this part can get edited out. Yeah, you hit it on the head, Justin. It's a real contrast in the two writings. And it, you know, it's funny because it's the personification of what I think a journey we men have to take. It's actually, and I say that it really does apply to women. I'm just talking about men because that's my audience. But you have to get shit done in life. You have to be a provider, whether you're a man or a woman, in most cases. And you have to slow down in your relationship and tune into the human that's inside of you and the human that you know your partner is.
Hmm. That's great. I also wanted to ask, you know, you've now got two different books out, and I'm wondering if you have any advice for listeners who aspire to write a book about the process or kind of what you've learned along the way.
Let's see. What advice would I have? It is a lot of work. I will tell you that. Just to observe principles in the world, codify them into really clear themes, organize them. But what I can say is twofold. If you want to make a transition into something else, writing a book, no matter how long it is, it could be a 50-page book. It's real credibility builder. So I do highly recommend it. I just want to warn you, it's a lot of work and, you know, put in the time to really make it the best that you can make it. Because if you have typos or unclear thought, then obviously it will reflect poorly on you. If you do it well, it's an instant credibility builder. The second is it's incredibly easy to publish a book in terms of logistics. The Amazon platform is essentially free to do. And of course you would pay them a royalty on any sales. But it's incredibly easy to do. You hire somebody to edit the book. You hire somebody to design the interior and the exterior. You upload it to Amazon. You're ready to go. And they print on demand, so they don't have to hold any inventory. So it's no skin off their back to pretty much publish anybody's book. So if you want to do it right, but check out the Amazon platform. It's very easy to use.
How long did it take you to write your first book, and how long did it take you to write your second book?
Each was 6 or 7 years each.
Wow.
But I was also working full time and raising 3 kids. So it was not a full time endeavor, but I stuck with it on nights, weekends, and mornings before anybody woke up, and it paid off.
I love that thread of your background, which is the sense that, persistence and continuing to show up can make a big difference. That allowed you to shift from product management to product marketing. That allowed you, of course, I think that's crazy for listeners to know, 6 to 7 years of working on nights and weekends, like keeping this dream going while having a full family life and a full professional life. And that might be what it takes to bring a side hustle to life, a book to life, whatever your creative endeavor is. And you can do that, but you have to be committed. And I hope that's encouragement, because most of our listeners have commitment instilled in them in the military. And that's a great asset you can bring to bear in your career or on your side hustle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My advice is simply turn off your TV and your phone and you'll find the time.
I bet. Any resources that have helped you in your civilian career that you would want listeners to know? And I'll also, for listeners at beyondtheuniform.org in the show notes, I'll add both of GS's books to the show notes so you can find them there. Anything else that you would recommend listeners check out?
I think what I would offer is something I've already said, is there are online platforms that help you build skills. Use them. and LinkedIn Learning is one. Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y is another. And there are others out there. And these are online video platforms. So if you want to make a transition out of the military, then Build the Skills. Those are great platforms to do it for free. All it takes is your time and dedication.
Great. Well, I always like to leave room at the end, open-ended, and you can take it one of two ways. Either what have we not talked about that you want to make sure listeners know, or what are some final words of wisdom you'd like to leave with listeners?
I would say that, first I'd say to all your listeners, thank you for what you do or what you have done in the military and defending what is dear to everyone in our country. So if you choose to stay in that, then that's great. My father did that, and it was a very noble choice, and he provided such a great role model for me. But if you choose to go a different direction, don't be afraid. Get yourself prepared. I remember feeling that fear when I was getting out. I wasn't sure what I was doing. It felt like I was, being kicked out into the cold. Not kicked out. I wasn't getting kicked out. I was going out into the cold. And don't be afraid, just prepare yourself. So again, with the skill building, again, with the side hustle, what is it that you need to sort of get a soft landing as you get out? Prepare now, prepare in advance. Don't wait for a month before your exit.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your advice with our audience. And again, for listeners, I'll add links to both of the books we discussed, as well as Udemy, LinkedIn Learning, and other resources in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me. Service. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you, and more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life, and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week, despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org. There is a newsletter You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.